Welcome to Very Fantastic Discoveries with me, June G. Fulmer. Today, we are going to talk about the fourth book in Lemony Snicket's A Series of Unfortunate Events, The Miserable Mill, which is the most weird and quirky book so far in more ways than one. Let's get started. After the destruction of Aunt Josephine's house, and her abandonment to the leeches by Count Olaf, Mr. Poe took Violet, Klaus, and Sunny and drove them through the finite forest and to the Lucky Smells lumber mill, which originally was the Lucky Smells melon farm. Unfortunately, they do not know their guardian's name because his signature was too hard for Mr. Poe to read and he would not let Klaus decipher it. The Baudelaires try to have a happy life at the lumber mill, even though the cruel short owner of the mill, who goes by Sir, makes them work in the mill for packs of gum, even baby Sunny. They try to ignore the ominous eye-shaped eye doctor's office and take the overly optimistic Phil's advice to live life like nothing bad can happen, even though the sadistic new foreman Flacket Toto, with an overly fake wig, mistreats the workers and calls the Baudelaires mean names. Then, one day, Foreman Flecky Toto trips Klaus and breaks his glasses, which means he has to go to the ominous eye doctor's office to have Dr. Irwell, the equally ominous eye doctor, give him new glasses. When Klaus comes back, he cannot remember anything that happened when he was there, calls Violet and Sunny by the wrong names, and has an unusual reaction to the word lucky. Once this has happened many times, and Klaus has actually injured Phil's leg and broken the string machine, Violet realizes that he is hypnotized and that the word to break him out of the hypnotic trance is the word inordinate. Violet also realizes that the reason for the hypnotism of Klaus is that Sir will fire Violet, Klaus, and Sunny if any more accidents are caused, which will place them in the care of Count Olaf and Dr. Irwell. Olaf is disguised as the receptionist Shirley T. Sinnott Purser and is more sinister than ever. When Violet and Sunny are doing research about hypnotism in the Lucky Smells library, they hear a buzzing noise. Going out to investigate, they find that Sir's loyal partner, Charles, has been tied to a log that is being pushed into a saw by hypnotized Klaus, and that the bald man had been disguised as the foreman all along and was working for Olaf, who was also there. Violet also finds out that the word to control Klaus in his hypnotized state is lucky. After using the command word to try to resist Olaf, Violet is thwarted by the newly arrived Dr. Irwell. They get into a huge fight with Violet wrestling with Olaf and the bald man, and Sunny facing Dr. Irwell. Once Sunny bites Dr. Irwell, things get taken up to a whole new level as Dr. Irwell produces a cane that turns into a sword to battle Sunny's bite. Meanwhile, Klaus is left dazed, but manages to stop the saw that is now sung into Charles's shoe, but not before Dr. Irwell falls in there and dies. And Violet manages to get away from the bald man and Count Olaf. Sir and Mr. Poe come in and witness all this, and the bald man and Olaf are held in the library in sort of a makeshift prison. Olaf and the bald man try to convince Sir that they were being hypnotized as well, but Mr. Poe finds Count Olaf's tattoo, and the game is up. Sir fires the Baudelaires, just after Count Olaf and his associate escape, and the Baudelaires are sent off to boarding school, where they will encounter a bully, an unfair vice principal, Count Olaf, and most importantly, two new friends. Now I welcome our regular guest, Dylan Fulmer. Hi, Daddy.
Hey, Jungi. How's it going?
It's going great.
So this is the fourth book in a series of unfortunate events by Lemony Snicket.
Yes.
And this is also the third time that we're recording our conversation, is it not? We've had some technical difficulties today, haven't we?
Yes.
Oh, well. It's nice to spend time with you and have this interesting conversation yet again.
Yes.
So let's see how this time goes. So lots of interesting things about this book, obviously.
Hypnotism. So the unfairness of Sir as well.
The unfairness of Sir, Count Olaf in yet another disguise, yeah. and his crew. So one thing that I didn't quite understand, so the first time that Klaus got hypnotized, right? So somebody tripped him, the foreman tripped him, right? And he broke his glasses. And that's why he had to go to the eye doctor's office.
Yeah.
Dr. Georgina Orwell.
Yeah.
And he came back hypnotized.
Yeah.
And when he came back hypnotized, he became part of some devious plot, yeah?
Yeah.
So why Charles? Like, it seems like putting Charles on some log that's going to be sawed in half or whatever would hurt Sir and Charles more than it would hurt the Baudelaires. So I don't quite understand why Charles would be the one that was chosen.
Remember, the whole reason for Klaus being hypnotized is so he can cause accidents like that, which will cause Sir to fire them. As the hook-handed man said in the TV show, wait till Sir finds out that his partner has been turned into human boards. He probably won't even wait till day to fire you.
Gotcha. So it didn't really have anything to do with Charles or anything like that. It was just he was close by and they wanted Klaus to be responsible for an accident so that the Baudelaires would get fired and then ultimately return to the care of Count Olaf.
Yeah, because who wouldn't be distraught that their partner had been turned into human boards?
I certainly would. And that would be quite a feat in general. So Sir and Charles were partners, and Sir was a mysterious figure because we never know what his full name is. It's apparently very long, his full name, and we never see his face fully because he's always smoking cigars, right?
Yeah, in the TV show, we do see his face clearly, and it is the face of some guy named Don Johnson or something.
Some guy named Don Johnson. Don Johnson was in a very popular show from when I was your age called Miami Vice, and he was very cool.
Okay, but I don't know what Miami Vice is. And he wasn't even wearing his green suit. I don't know what is up.
Yeah, I saw pictures. It looked like he was wearing like a cream-colored suit, right?
Yeah.
And in the book, he was wearing a green suit.
He was like short.
Mm-hmm.
With like you couldn't even see his face. And it was like I'd see pictures of the villain from Hercules, mm-hmm. and it looked like that, but without facial features.
Right.
Like his head was smoking like that guy.
Wow.
I don't get why they chose to expose his face.
In the show?
Yeah.
Well, as you know, there's lots of differences between the show and the books.
Chief amongst them, in the book, Mr. Poe gets them to the lumber mill in his car through the finite forest, but in the show, they go by themselves without Mr. Poe's notice.
Right. So, yeah, that was something that I was curious about because, like, why would Mr. Poe think to send them to a lumber mill?
I had no idea. Maybe it was... Oh, I remember in book 7, mm-hmm. he was making telephone calls about people who would take the Baudelaires, and there was literally nobody that would take the Baudelaires.
Right.
After what happened to Uncle Monty and Aunt Josephine and such. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's why he went for a lumber mill.
Right, but obviously, you know, what happened to all of them was not the Baudelaires' fault. It was Count Olaf's fault.
Yeah, and they...
Because the Baudelaires, let's face it, are some top-quality children. They are extremely intelligent and resourceful.
Even the baby.
So, yeah, so in the book, they Mr. Poe sent them there, but in the show, they went there on their own accord.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Like, they snuck off because of this photograph they'd seen with Lucky Smell's Lumber Mill in the background.
Right. And I'm guessing that Lucky Smell's Lumber Mill was a play on... There was a brand of cigarettes called Lucky Strikes cigarettes. So I'm guessing there was, you know, since it's the same initials, Lucky Strikes, Lucky Smells.
And Sir does the...
And Sir smokes, but he's smoking cigars. Anyway, but you said it was originally a melon farm, and then it got turned into a lumber mill?
Melon farm. The Baudelaires don't actually know that till the last book when someone tells them that originally there was a place called Lucky Smells Melon Farm, and the Baudelaires thought that Sir and Charles owned the Lucky Smell Melon Farm, but actually someone else did.
Gotcha.
And then Sir came along and turned it into a lumber mill.
Right. Okay. So the place where the Lucky Smells lumber mill was located was in a town called Paltryville, yes, which was right next to a place called the Finite Forest.
Which, and there was actually a place nearby the Finite Forest, in turn, named Tedia.
Tedia.
Which is funny. Tedia, Paltryville, like tedious and paltry.
Right, exactly.
That's funny.
Yes. And I guess the lumber mill is supplied with wood from the Finite Forest, which is becoming more and more finite with each passing day, I would imagine.
Yeah, and that wood was used to build the Baudelaire's house, used to build the Quagmire's and the Snicket's house, and also used to make a green mansion. And I believe the unknown hidden top floor of an apartment building that the Baudelaires would stay in later on.
Gotcha. So what was special about this green wood?
Well, the VFD members chose it because... They loved books, and one of their favorite books was a book entitled Green Mansions. That was why.
Interesting. So yeah, the VFD. Let's talk about them some more. We mentioned the VFD in the last episode. The VFD stands originally for...
Volunteer Fire Department.
Volunteer Fire Department. And there were two factions of the Volunteer Fire Department.
The Fire Starting Side and the Fire Fighting Side, which originally was one side until there was a schism. I believe that's how you say it.
Yes, it is.
That involved Lemony Snicket's sister, the Baudelaire parents, Count Olaf, and a box of poison darts.
A box of poison darts. I do not want to be on the business end of a box of poison darts. That would be bad. So, VFD, and then it also had several different incarnations.
Volunteer Fire Department was the main one, and then they used the initials in, like, codes and names for things.
Such as?
Vernacularly fastened door, vessel for, how do you say this, discariads?
Okay.
Volunteer feline detectives, very fresh dill.
And the name of this very podcast,
which is Fantastic Discoveries.
Ha ha.
I thought that we'd be infringing on some copyright or something.
VFD is not copyrighted. It is just a series of letters, a series of fortunate letters. Right, so, okay, so Paltryville, there was not much going on there. It was paltry, and it burned down.
No, in the show.
In the show, it burned down, right. So VFD, you know, lots of interesting wordplay that he does with that throughout the series. And, you know, one of the things that we talked about before was he's very fond of using the convention of two-letter titles of things that have that share the same first letter, two-word titles that share the same first letter, such as The Bad Beginning, The Reptile Room, The Wide Window,
Miserable Mill,
and we have The Finite Forest within this, and all the books share that same convention aside from the end.
Yes.
Right. So the last book is called The End. That's the only one. Okay. So, and then we also have, and another repeating double F in this, we have the Forman Flacutono.
Which, as you know, is an anagram for Count Olaf.
Right, so it's another thing that the author likes to do with words is anagrams and sort of backwards, because Count Olaf's disguise in this episode was surely...
Key Snot Piecer.
Which was the...
Receptionist
backwards. Yes.
Count Olaf is not really feeling that creative in this episode. Just rearranging the letters to make of his name to make Flacutono.
Right, but didn't he do the same thing in...
spelling his disguise backwards.
Didn't he do the same thing in the first book, too, in The Bad Beginning? He just, like, took...
Alfunkut?
Yeah. No, wasn't there something where it was, like, secretary or something like that, where he... did the same thing, put the letters backwards, or was this the first time he had done that?
What do you mean, secretary?
Where the person that he was impersonating, he took, like, the word of what their job was and then just put it backwards as their last name. Was this the first time he did this, or with the receptionist?
I'm not sure which one.
Because I thought he did that in the first episode. Maybe I'm misremembering. Or wait, first book, sorry.
Wait, are you...
When he met Mr. Poe for the first time.
That was only in the show, and I don't think Jessica Haircut is...
Ah, Jessica Haircut. Okay.
And well, that was only in the show anyway.
My mistake. So, Georgina Orwell.
I know she, her name is a play on words for George Orwell.
Right.
And I alluded to this in my custom Google forums about Lemony Snicket, where, I had... a question saying, what is the name of the evil hypnotist eye examiner? Mm-hmm. And one of the answers I put was a title of one of George Orwell's book, which I understand there was a book he wrote called Animal Farm.
That is correct, yes.
I understood, so one of the options in my quiz was Animal Farm.
Aha. I think specifically in this book, the reference to George Orwell for Georgina Orwell... the big eye, which is like representing Big Brother sort of thing.
I have no idea what that is.
Big Brother is the sort of morality police looking out over and surveilling all the citizens in the book 1984, The Face of the Party. So Catherine O'Hara, who played Georgina Orwell in the show, also played...
Justice Strauss in the original movie.
Which, by the way,
I read a synopsis, and all of the events are like are out of order, and there are many parts that weren't in the books.
Right.
I am never watching it.
Okay, that's fine. So one of the things, going back to the conditions in the mill, which is still odd to me, these poor children, they're such fine children, and they, you know, always get the bad end of the deal. So you talked about they got gum, and they had to eat gum, and they were also eating disgusting casseroles.
Yes, and they had to...
Did they ever describe any of the casseroles about, like, what was disgusting about them, or just saying that they were disgusting casseroles?
I can't remember, but in the next book, a casserole will appear.
Really?
And
also disgusting, or...?
Actually, I'm not sure if it was a casserole or a lasagna or both, mm-hmm. but apparently it was the biggest one the Baudelaires had ever seen.
Gotcha.
And also...
Mm-hmm.
They are supposed to work in the lumber mill itself for gum and casseroles.
Right, exactly.
Sunny doesn't want either of those, so she chews on a piece of bark, pretending it is an enchilada.
Ha!
Smart thing to do.
Olay. All right, Jungi. Well, anything else you wanted to talk about with this book before we end this week's episode?
The thing where in the... book, Forman Flacutono was the bald man with the long nose.
Right. And in the show, he was the hook-handed man?
Yes.
Another artistic license that was taken in the...
And an artistic license I am particularly unhappy with in the Miserable Mill was in the book, the most funny thing happened.
Which was?
In the end fight, mm-hmm. when Violet is wrestling with Count Olaf and the Bald Man, and Klaus is disabling the saw,
mm-hmm.
And Dr. Orwell and Sunny are facing off. In the book, Sunny bites Dr. Orwell's hand with her incredibly sharp teeth, and then she goes and bares her teeth, and Dr. Orwell gives her cane, her crystal top cane, presses a button on the crystal, and a sword blade extends out the other end.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And Sunny has sufficiently sharp teeth that she can keep pointed at Dr. Orwell for them to have an actually decent sword fight without cutting the baby's mouth off.
That would have been interesting for them to show that. Maybe they didn't want to show a big, scary, pointy teeth baby fighting somebody in a sword fight.
They already showed her biting a rock, right. Sawing the logs, the barks off the logs.
Mm-hmm.
And they already showed Dr. Orwell holding Sunny over a furnace.
Right.
Which arguably is even more gruesome than what happened in the book.
Right.
So, they could have.
They could have, alas. But, you know, again, we only have like another month and a half until, or month and 2 weeks. Yeah, month and a half until the new series comes out. So that's very exciting.
Yeah.
And maybe we can coincide with having our next Lemony Snicket episode coinciding with the beginning of the next series.
Perhaps.
Because this is this book that we're discussing now is where season one left off, right?
Yeah.
On the Netflix show. So the next book is, what is that called?
The Austere Academy.
The Austere Academy. Well, I look forward to talking about that very soon. And Joongi, thanks again for another great conversation, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Yep, and the party.
Oh, and the party, yes. We're going to have a big party today because this is our 10th episode, and we're going to celebrate accordingly. So thanks to everybody who's listened, and we'll see you again soon.
See you again soon. That's all the time we have for today, and I hope you enjoyed today's episode. We are going to have a big party celebrating this 10th episode, and I wish you could join in. You can find us at veryfantasticdiscoveries.com, Stitcher, iTunes, and more. I bet you won't even have to be hypnotized to do it. Next episode, we are going to have an episode about Zeus. I have a few names for that episode in mind, but the one that comes to mind right now is The Crimes of Zeus! It will be a very enlightening episode, I promise. Goodbye!